Good afternoon, everyone. So this session is called Adjust the Perspective with Responsive Design for SharePoint. My name is Kathy Du. I'm a consultant for a company called Planet Technologies, and we're actually in the expo hall. You could come visit us over there. And I am a SharePoint MVP and thrilled to be here to discuss this topic with you today. So if the first thing we're going to do is actually define what responsive design is. Responsive design is the theory that design and development should respond to a user's behavior and environment based on screen size, platform, and orientation. It consists of basically three key components. It consists of a flexible grid layout system, flexible images and media, as well as CSS and media queries. So we're going to go through these three components, and then we're going to actually talk about how we put this in place. So what is adaptive web design? There's two key schools of thought right now, responsive web design and adaptive web design. Responsive is it's going to cue off of the device resolution and orientation, whereas adaptive is that the content is going to adapt to both the resolution and the content. So where responsive, everything stays in place. With adaptive, we can actually go out and target things. So say if I am in an African country, and I am hitting the internet to go to a website, and my bandwidth is low because maybe I am using satellite internet connection, my site would adapt and maybe strip out videos that were streaming onto the site, things like that. It's all about adapting the content and the site design to how you're coming into the environment. So it's identifying the breakpoints and then focusing on content delivery as adaptive design, whereas responsive design is identifying the breakpoints and responding all of our content to that breakpoint. Breakpoints are typically defined as screen resolution areas. So for me, in moving towards defining and developing SharePoint responsive design, I've identified and target three primary breakpoints. Let's not be honest, there's tons of devices in the world, right? We're in that BYOD world now, bring your own device. Everyone has a cell phone, everyone has a tablet, and there's thousands of them to choose from. So how I typically work is I identify three primary breakpoints that meet the general standard, and we start from there. The first is a desktop breakpoint, so basically a resolution that's 1024 px or higher. The next one is a tablet breakpoint, which is 768 or lower, down to the mobile breakpoint, which is a 320 px resolution, right? So I identify the three primary breakpoints, and that's how I start working my SharePoint design, to kind of identify those. It helps for a number of reasons, which we'll go through as we move on. So why do we do responsive design? You know, it's this kind of thing now. I go out, I come from an old web school background, right? I worked in advertising. I was a print designer for a number of years. I used to design newspaper ads and catalogs and magazines. Now I'm in this web design world, and now I've got this whole responsive thing to think about, and why do we do it? Actually, there are studies out there as to why we do this. We actually do responsive design because in 2014, mobile internet will take over desktop usage, meaning that more people will access websites from a mobile platform than from a desktop. It's completely different from how we used to think about web design in the past. Now it is mobile-first thinking. The abundance of mobile browsing has now changed us to thinking of responsive design and planning for it first, and making sure that if we're going out and we're creating sites, that we are doing responsive first. We're doing mobile and we're planning for it. One of the key things that I like to tell people is that it's really a matter of defining when we need responsive. So when do we create it? Especially when we're talking about SharePoint, right? When do we create it? What is the need for it? What is our business reason to do mobile? What type of site is it? I will tell you flat out, if you're developing a public-facing website in this year or the coming years, and you're not thinking of making it responsive, you should probably go back and rethink that decision. because of the fact that most people visit a website first from a device. And the whole thing with user experience, right, is it's not just, oh, it looks pretty. Right? I love when people introduce me and they don't understand what I do, and they say, this is Kathy, she makes things look pretty. To which I typically say, oh, thank you, but that's not really what I do. User experience is the first and the last impression of your site on a user. The first impression is always that, oh, does it look nice, right? It's the colors, it's the images, it's the layout. But the last impression is always, did I go to that site and was I able to achieve what I needed to do when I went there? The big key point that I usually use for that, does anybody in the room remember when Yahoo was a search engine? Yeah? If you go to the Yahoo homepage now, can you find the search box? It's all about entertainment news and celebrities. It's like buried over in the side. So it's all about making sure that if I was going to Yahoo to search right now, my user experience, my last impression would probably be negative. So it's all about making the decision that I need to make that first and last impression positive, and that's how I start making my decisions about when am I creating a responsive site. Like I said, if it's public-facing and you're developing it now or in the future, if you're not thinking responsive and mobile, you need to rethink the decision. If you are working with SharePoint and you are doing an intranet, this is where it starts to get in that iffy situation, right? When do I make the decision? If you are working with a publishing content area, sections of the site where I'm publishing out content to people and I want them to consume that information, it is not out of the realm of possibility to make that mobile and responsive. But if you are using with SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 team sites and items that have lists and libraries, those are not going to be responsive. We simply are not there from the technology perspective to fight that fight. It's not worth the investment. You can go out and make it mobile and responsive, but it's really not worth the time and energy. You're going to bang your head. You're going to be bruised up. You're going to have, I don't know, gone through lots of bottles of liquor. I'm not sure what your typical method is to get through those things, but you will have spent a lot of money on it, and it's not going to be worth that amount of time. But if you are doing a publishing area of your intranet, yes, consider making that responsive. If you are trying to think about making my sites responsive, please don't. Okay. If you are trying to consider making multiple different things, really go through and evaluate. If I am using that publishing template, make it responsive. If I am using a lot of the other templates, blogs can make responsive, but if I am using team sites and some of those other ones, you probably want to really evaluate what is my business use case for needing to make that responsive. I will tell you flat out, lists and libraries just walk away. My sites just walk away. It's not worth it. Challenges, right? So we come into SharePoint, we're in this brave new SharePoint 2013 world, and we've been in it for a little while, and we're trying to figure it out, and we've got this whole SharePoint Online mixture in there, right, too, this Office 365 SharePoint Online world. How do I go in and do this? What do I need to think about? What are my challenges? So the biggest challenges that, in my opinion, that we face is the design manager and having the ability to import that HTML in, right? I will tell you that I work numerous times with people that go out and hire external advertising agencies or design firms that have never had any exposure to SharePoint before, and with this new idea that I can just import that HTML in and the design manager magically makes it SharePoint, they go out and create these really complex designs, and they hand them over, and they say, just import it, and it'll work. Well, that's not really how that works. It's not how it was intended to work. It is a leg up for us, but it is not a magic bullet. It is not going to slay that dragon, right? The lots of devices is our other challenge, because it is a bring-your-own-device world. We don't typically mandate that we're only going to target an iPad mini, and we're only going to target a Windows phone, right? We have to target an iPhone and multiple versions of an iPhone, which could have different screen resolutions and different iPads and a Surface versus a, you know, Dell tablet versus all of these other devices. And so what does that mean for us as the people developing and designing that? That means that we have to do a lot of testing, right? And a lot of fixing and a lot of CSS hacking to make it work. It's not impossible, but it is a challenge. It is one of those things that increases our user experience development and testing costs. And like I said, it is not good for intranets that are making use of the team documents, libraries, lists. Just if you try to make it responsive, I'm sorry. So it is great. It has a lot of great things. And Office 365, there are some unique challenges there as well. Office 365, remember that we are in a cloud environment, which means that we do not control our servers, which means that Microsoft will push updates out that can affect our responsive designs, right? So we have to plan for that. How do we implement it? If I'm doing implementation of a responsive design site on an on-premises environment, I am typically deploying it through a full trust solution. If I am in Office 365, I have to figure out how to do that. I will tell you the method that we are trending towards is moving away from sandbox solutions to deploy that branding and into writing an app that will deploy your branding. And they just actually released on Sunday an example of one of those branding apps on MSDN. Right, so what is it? Why do we do this? Why do I care? Here's just kind of one example. LG Ontario, I like to pull out all kinds of different ones. So this one, we can take a look at the three different versions of the site here. So you can look and see some of the components, some of the design considerations that were made. You can see things like the logo moves around and shifts location and size. The navigation moves. Images start getting stripped. Some of the styling changes as I move from desktop to tablet to phone. Right? So we kind of design for all three devices, keeping the similar in mind, but we have three different breakpoints. So how does it work, right? So I talked to you a little bit about how, why do we want it, why do I need it? Now I have to tell you how we do it. So we do this, basically we use a lot of grids. I will tell you that myself, I went to art school. When I was trying to decide where to go to college, I had two careers in mind. I was thinking about becoming an industrial engineer, or I was going to go get a painting degree. And I'll tell you, I decided to go get that painting degree because there were a lot less math classes involved in that degree than that engineering one. And so now, in coming out and doing this and working in web and working in IT, and now with responsive, guess what I do every day? I do a lot of math. So I have grid-based layouts, which basically means is that I align everything on a grid. And so when I then am adjusting my sites from a different device resolution, I am changing the math to align things differently on that grid, right? So there's a lot of zero position, 80px, 150, moving things around based off of that media query, right? But I do all of my layouts and everything on a grid, right? So we do that. There's a lot of different grids out there that people use. Twitter Bootstrap, 960 Grid, you can create your own. However you are comfortable doing it, I will tell you that the majority of people doing SharePoint responsive site design right now are using Twitter Bootstrap. That's kind of one of the most ones that people like, but there is no wrong answer here, okay? You don't have to use one of these. You can create your own. You can pick one that I don't have on the list. There is no wrong answer. It is all about what you are comfortable with. So how do we do that? Basically, we've gone through now. We have our grid. We know how it's going to work. Now we have to deal with our images, right? Because we never are going to have a site that doesn't have an image in it. Whether it be a logo, a footer, an icon, whatever, we're going to have some images. And we need to make sure that our images can adjust, they can change sizes, they can move around, that we're controlling how these images work. So most of this is done through CSS. And so you can see it's just a matter of setting that image. Max width is the most recognizable way to do this, by basically telling that image to become the maximum width of the location that it's going into. So that div, ID, whatever, we give it a width, and I'm telling any image to fill that maximum width of that area. right? There are some limitations on this, some things to have to worry about. The first one on this list is that IE6 isn't supported, right? Which we kind of laugh and chuckle and say, well, that's great. SharePoint doesn't support it either, which is fantastic, right? But there are those particular cases, and I have run into them, where a user system, customer, client is still using Internet Explorer 6. So this method doesn't work there, right? Broader issues with Windows. They have some issues with Windows. IE7 and lower, this has issues. So if you are working with a Windows operating system that is IE7 or lower, you're going to have some issues. There's plenty of workarounds for it. It's just going to be you have to change things up a little bit, but it's easy enough to fix. It's a very simple workaround. If you're using Windows 7 or Windows 8, guess what? It's been fixed, so we don't have to worry about that, right? So the third component of our CSS responsive picture here, we have our layouts, we have our images, next is our media queries. This is basically how are we telling it what device we want it to use. So we have to go through and define that out. And there's a whole giant list of media types that have been defined by the web consortium, you know, W3C. So you can go out and find what those are. But then I have, here's kind of the example of what that media query looks like in our CSS file. So we go in and we basically tell it that the media for a device that I'm looking for is screen, because I'm going to target something that is smaller, so a tablet in this case, smaller, a minimum width of 1026, you know, so this may be my desktop. I'm saying if the screen resolution is a minimum of a 1026 pixel resolution, anything that I put below that in this media query is going to apply, right? So I'm going out and I'm finding what the media type is, the screen, and then I'm defining a query parameter with a value. So here it was that it's a minimum width of 1026 px. Really super simple to do. It's a matter of defining what those media queries are, right? So like I said, for me, I do three different media queries. This is one of them. This is my desktop one, and I have a tablet one, and I have a phone one. You put these directly in your style sheet. You can do them as separate files and link to them from the master page. There's lots of different ways to do this. I put them directly in my CSS file, and I'll show you that as we get to the demo. So the next piece is actually designing the thing, right? So I understand the concepts of it and why I would do it, but now I need to actually set about that path. We're gathering requirements. I want to start putting something in place. So the biggest thing, as in any user experience development for SharePoint, is knowing the implications of our decisions and knowing what we need to be paying attention to. The first and biggest one is navigation consistency. Knowing what our navigation is, what are we using, how are we using it, how do we intend our users to get around in our site. And this becomes extremely important as we start moving to that smallest device size, right? When I am dividing for a smartphone, which is tiny, it's usually, you know, about the shape of your hand, there's a lot less real estate here to put navigation components into it. So you think about what is in SharePoint, right? We have top navigation. We have the left navigation, quick launch, current navigation. They've all got like 12 names each, so whichever name you call it. The breadcrumb navigation, any extra navigation that we put into the page, we have to think about how is that going to translate from a smartphone all the way to a desktop, right? So there's a lot of navigation components that we have there, and we want to make sure that at least something is consistent. Something is the same regardless of which type of device I'm coming into. So that could mean that I decide that on my smartphone, I am only utilizing the top navigation and the others will be hidden. But then when I move to the tablet, maybe the current navigation, that quick launch navigation, comes back into place. But then when I'm in the full desktop version, I have all types of different types of navigation, right? So it's making sure those decisions are there and that something stays consistent. Permissions is another big one, right? If I'm an intranet, where am I putting things? How does that work? Who has permission to the right files? That's always a challenge in any SharePoint implementation. The site template, like I said, a lot of site templates in SharePoint have some different pieces in it. They have different CSS, different things that we need to make sure we're accounting for. The ribbon. How do we deal with a ribbon when we're on a responsive site? That and the sweet bar. Sweet bar is that little piece across the top that's blue, right? How do I deal with that? Because it's needed, I can't get rid of it if I'm using a desktop, but maybe I don't need it when I get down to mobile. You know, am I going to try to allow users to edit content from their smartphone? Am I not? So you have to think about all of those things. Search pages. If I'm using search pages and I'm creating custom display templates, I need to be thinking about how are those going to react on a smartphone or device. And then, like I said, my sites. Don't try to make them responsive, but you need to think about them, because what happens if they click that link and they go into their My Site on their smartphone? It's just more of a communication issue there than it is something that we need to develop for, but it is something that we need to know the implications of from an overall user experience perspective. So I'm actually going to go through a few sites, and we're going to talk about some of the decisions that were made here, primarily around navigation in each of these different sites. So if we look at Maryland.gov, they have a fairly responsive site, and it goes through four different types of site kind of idea. So you look up here, we see our desktop version. It's got this big, pretty banner image picture. It's got navigation. It's got some tab content below it. Then when we move over to our tablet, which is the next one over to your right, that one has the logo has moved around, the search bar became more prominent, the picture is still there, the content switched up, right? So now instead of being that tab content with multiple areas, we see it starting to stack up and become one content area. Then when we move over to the phone, to the smartphone design, you see that the logo is still there, the search bar is still very prominent right there below the logo and the picture. And then you see at the top right there, the red bar has now become the menu. But what you don't see is those individual navigation items. That menu has become collapsible. And when you expand that out, you get that black menu that overlays over the logo and the search bar and all of that information. So you can start to see some of the decisions that they made here. The search bar was one that they decided needed to be prominent as I moved into the device. Right? Navigation became something that we switched into collapsible, and it became something that moved in location, but still very prominent. It's right at the top. The image and the logo, how we moved those around and adapted those, something that we had to consider as we moved from big to little. So the next one's over is Marshfield Clinic. So looking at this one, you'll see it's very much, it's got the big rotating image at the top, right, with some text on it. The menu is a series of icons that are down at the bottom with another little welcome bar. So then as I move over, that welcome bar goes up to the top. My image and my news content, how they used to be overlapped, now are separated. My menu of icons is still there. Moving down into the device, again, we've made the decision that my navigation, the explore option, is now a drop down with those icons. My content, my picture, and my news, and all of that is still there. So it's all about determining what your key components are and how am I going to make those decisions around it, right? Got one more. This one has the CFA Institute. You can see it has a bar graph. It's the biggest way to see the changes of this one between the three devices is that image of that bar graph. The text moving, as I move into the tablet size, the text starts to really overlay that and the content starts to stack on top of it. And then when I move down to my smartphone size, the text takes up most of the image area and is layered on top of that bar graph. The image becomes secondary and we've moved around. So it's all about figuring out those key things. I will tell you that when I am designing sites for responsive, I always start my design mock-ups from the smartphone version first, and then move my way out, right? And we're going to talk about why I do that as we go through the next section. So how do we put that design in place? What are we actually trying to do? This is the biggest piece of this puzzle, is actually doing the design. So moving into that, I always start out with wireframes. Wireframes are the way to separate content from functionality, right? So if I'm going in and I'm working with you, I want to talk about what we're putting in place, how the navigation is going to work, where it's going to live, how is it going to function, separated from the colors and images. Because as soon as I give you colors and images, right, we get distracted. We get that, oh, but I want to take that red there and put it in this element, and I want that picture in this one, and we start Franken-designing, right? We're pulling pieces from different pieces and trying to assemble it together instead of focusing on the actual functionality. So here, it's a sample, just basic SharePoint site, but you can see we can quickly jump into putting together those wireframes for a responsive site by starting with our mobile, and you can see some of the decisions that I've started to make here. We have the logo at the top. Our search box is very prominent below that. Then our top navigation, and then our content. So then you see as we move over to the tablet version, which is next to it, how things start to shift around. Our search box moves, our navigation moves, we added into the quick launch navigation. Our content, instead of being one single column, now has multiple columns. We still have a footer at the bottom. So it's a matter of making some of those decisions and how are we going to adjust that around. And you'll notice in my wireframes here, they do have grids behind them so that I can turn those on or off, depending on who I'm working with, but it helps me as I move from wireframe into visual mockup, right? When I move into design comp where I am printing the colors and pictures with it, that grid and having it in the wireframe helps. So I always start that way. We can have some key discussions at this point about the business, about what we're doing with our site. So as you can see here, there is no quick launch navigation. There's no left navigation in the smartphone design, right? So we can have discussions around that. Is that something that we need? Is it something that we don't need? Does the navigation, the top navigation right now, you'll see I have it in a little collapsible icon up there at the top. Is it something that I need to have more prominent? Do I need to have those options laid out? Quickly, navigation is one touch too many, right? If I have a SharePoint navigation system that is a tree, you know, branching out multiple display levels, how do I work with that? We work all of these pieces out in the wireframe before we move to the design comp. Because, again, we're focusing on the functionality here. How is it going to function? The biggest key to this is if I'm on my phone, it's the most limited screen resolution I have. And I have to make sure it's very much in the old advertising days when we used to do print design and we would publish newspapers. You know, people remember those old things called newspapers. We would highlight what we wanted people to have. You know, there's a headline on a newspaper. And it's called above the fold. The most important information went into the newspaper above the fold. Now, when we start talking about web design, it's above the scroll, right? What information is above the point where I have to scroll to get to more information? That is usually the most important thing that we need our users to interact with. That is highly important when it comes to a smartphone device, right? What is it? How do we do that? One of the most prominent things that I see with developing SharePoint responsive sites is putting the search bar up there, right? Because I can easily search now with the more enhanced SharePoint search in 2013 and find information more clearly. So moving search to the top makes it so we can do things like get rid of the left navigation on a smartphone, right? So then as we move into the tablet device, things don't really change too much there. When we move into the desktop device, you see it really, we didn't add anything else. We didn't change much else. It really just became a little bit larger, and things moved out the way that we needed them to, right? One of the things that you'll probably want to end up doing, especially if you're doing public facing, I didn't do it in this because in my demo here, I've still got the ribbon and the sweep bar there, primarily to show you why you have to think about it. Right? But one of the things you'll want to do is make sure you pay attention to whether or not you're including that in this. Because if I go back to that last slide, you see here it's large, right? We've got this nice big space. It shows up. As I move into the tablet version, you see how things start to get compressed. When I move into the phone version, think about all those little links and things that SharePoint has up in the ribbon and in that sweet bar. Think about what it's going to do to those, right? So maybe when I'm on my smartphone, I don't have a ribbon and I don't have a sweet bar. We have to think about all of those decisions. And again, we do that through the wireframe to start with. How do you create wireframes? The tool that I use to create those is called Balsamiq. It's one that I like. One of the reasons that I like it is that it's relatively inexpensive. For an individual user, it's a $99 purchase price, and I can install it on as many devices as I want. In fact, I have it on my Apple laptop. I have it on my PC. I have it on my Surface. I can install it in as many places as I want as long as it's me. So that's why I typically like Balsamiq. But you can use anything you're comfortable with. Again, there is no right or wrong answer to this. It's all about what you're comfortable with. You can use Visio. You could use any of the Adobe Creative Suite platform pieces, Illustrator, InDesign, any of those that you're comfortable with. There's another tool out there called Acture that's really nice to work with. You can do wireframes in it. It produces reports. You could do click-through testing and things like that in Acture. It is more expensive, which is one of the reasons I'm not demoing it here, because it's not cheap. You can also, I will tell you that I have had people deliver what they think from a business side wireframe to me. The most creative program that I ever got one in was Excel, to which I thought, wow, he must really love Excel. He was a CFO, so he really spent his whole day in Excel. That's what he was most comfortable in. So he threw together a wireframe of what he thought needed to be on his site in Excel, and it sent it to me. You could create them in anything. There is no right or wrong answer. If you do use Balsamiq, there is a great template already out there. In fact, that first page that I showed you that was that team site template before I went into the mobile, that's out there on the web where you can download it from a company, Flucidity. It's a young man named Matthew Hughes, who's running around this conference. He put that together, and you can download that and use it. From that wireframe, we have made a lot of decisions, and we can start going through and creating a user experience artifact plan. What exactly does that mean? That means that we are going through, and we're going to know from those wireframes. Remember, we haven't gone through and created those visual comps with the pretty colors and pictures that people go squirrel at and all of that yet. We haven't gotten there yet, but now I already know what master pages I'm going to need. Different CSS files. Am I going to be using third-party navigation components like Mega Menu? Am I going to have image carousels? I've got all of these things in mind that I can already start putting together that design artifact plan to know what I'm going to be developing. And it's extremely helpful to have that. You should have one of those. You should follow one of those. It makes it easier. It's a living, breathing thing. It's going to change throughout the life of your development project. So from there, we have our artifact plan. We have our wireframes. We've determined what that functionality is. Now we need to go through and add those colors and the images. So typically, I do my mock-ups in Photoshop, and so you can see a Photoshop mock-up there of a mobile device with the grid in the background, so you can start to see it. Again, a lot of times when I'm delivering these to people for a review, I turn that grid system off, so they get just the pretty white. They don't see all those red columns and grids in there, but it helps you when you go to start doing your development with that math. And again, I don't like math, so I have to have my grids there so that I can easily visually see it. It really helps me. But you can see the things that I've paid attention here is defining out how that navigation is going to collapse, where the search box is going to be. What do I do with those SharePoint components, like the page title, like the logo, like the ribbon, right? How am I dealing with those? Moving on, I didn't put the tablet one in here. I just did the desktop because the tablet and the desktop for this piece were not too different. From a resolution perspective, I had already made my desktop version fixed width, so moving it down to a device of the tablet didn't lose too much. It just means that on my tablet, it's not going to look like it's a fixed width. It's going to go all the way to the sides. But you can see my content, my quick launch navigation, my web parts, my navigation, my top navigation, my page title, my logo, my search bar, my ribbon, all of these components of SharePoint that we're defining and designing in our mockups. Right? This is always the point where you're delivering multiple concepts and people do Frankendesign, right? They look at this and they say, but what if those menu navigation items at the top were blue and that bar below it was green? And, you know, what if we put this picture from this one here? And we always go through several rounds of this, but we need to make sure those key SharePoint elements that we have identified and we're going to be utilizing are accounted for. Especially if you're doing the design component and handing it off to someone to develop, right? Because you don't want them guessing what they need to do. One of my favorite things is when people send it to me and I ask them, what does this web part need to look like? And they say, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, you really sometimes don't want people guessing what it needs to look like. I don't want some of my developers guessing, because I can tell you I've gotten some of them to guess before, and it comes back neon yellow and red, and that's just from not designing for McDonald's. It's not, you know, the golden arches. So I want to define what those are, put that in there, and go for it. So from there, we have to actually create these design artifacts, right? We've designed it. We've put it in a wireframe. We know what we're going to do. We've got a plan. Now we have to execute the plan. So from here, what do we do? And a lot of this I'm going to do through demo, but I'm going to talk through some of the differences between what I'm going to show you in the demo are versus what you would be doing if you're doing this in Office 365 before I jump into the demo. Okay? So the key things that you're going to have differences are that there are going to be elements of Office 365 that we cannot control. Right now, I'll tell you the biggest one is the sweep bar. That's going to change. I don't know when it's going to change, but right now it's blue, and we can't make it not blue very easily because of some JavaScript injection that's happening now through a development push from Microsoft. Right? Some of the other things that we need to be aware of with Office 365 is how we actually develop it, right? So when I'm developing for an on-premises, like I am in this demo that you're going to see later, I've mapped my drive, my location for where I'm putting my files to my machine. You can't do that in Office 365. So in your development environment, it is more of a challenge to create and customize these files. Not impossible, just more of a challenge. So figuring out where you're going to put things in Office 365 is more of a challenge. You may have gone to some other sessions and heard things like put items in the root, right? Put it in the layouts folder. Well, when I'm in Office 365, I don't have access to that. It's not a full trust solution. How do I do that? So it's all about figuring out, you know, we've designed it, but then we have to look at our platform and figure out our challenges there. I originally intended to do this entire demo in Office 365. But in the last few weeks, some of the things that have been pushed out made it very difficult to continue to do this demo in Office 365. It was a moving target, and I didn't want to have a moving target for your demo. So I took it back. It's not impossible to do. It is just a matter of figuring out the best way to implement it, and that is something that is an ongoing discussion, and you will probably see a blog post from me in the very near future about what is some of the recommended ways to go about developing this for Office 365, because it's changed in the last 3 months, right? But there are some of those challenges. Like I said, the sweep bar is a challenge. Doing things like hiding the ribbon in Office 365 is a challenge. Whereas if I'm on an on-premises installation, I can usually easily do that. The reason why it's more different in the Office 365 experience is because that's one of the key components that they're continuing to update as they add in new functionality and features. So what you don't know is when they add one of those new pieces of functionality or features in, if they're going to change something that's going to affect what you're trying to do And the last thing we want to happen from a user experience perspective is to have things changing on a weekly basis for our users, right? They get confused. The typical user is not, I log in, and while we're used to it on our phone, you know, how many different versions of iOS do we have, or how many times does Facebook update their UI and our mobile phone and move things around, and, you know, Yammer does the same thing. Something's here one day, and it's over here the other. But we don't want to do that for our intranets, right? If I'm doing an intranet for my company, I don't want that corporate intranet to be a moving target. So we kind of have to plan for that with Office 365 and think about how we're going to deal with that. The other big piece on that is figuring out how we're going to implement it. Like I said, in the past, for the last 6 months, I've been doing this all through Sandbox Solutions and taking my code and packaging it up in a Sandbox solution. So all of my master pages and my CSS and my JavaScript and all of that in a Sandbox solution and deploying it that way. And while that is still an officially supported method of applying branding to Office 365, it's not deprecated, it's not code that's going against the server or against the API, so it is something that is still officially accepted. The new trend is to move that towards an app and creating an app that you add into your site and activate, and it now controls the branding for your Office 365 environment. So it gives you more abilities to do things than we did with just a sandbox solution, such as creating custom actions and items like that through JavaScript to control more of it. We can package that in the app. So it is moving slightly for some of you in the audience, you know, that are more designer focused like I am, not necessarily loving Visual Studio and in it and loving it and embracing it. It is moving in slightly more of a developer-focused method for Office 365 and, I believe, in my opinion, eventually for on-premises installations. But for now, we still have a lot of the same methods that we had in the past to go through and create our designs and put them in place. And it allows us to control it as we move towards this whole bring your own device piece into the workplace and having these sites be accessible. So I'm going to jump over and do some demos for you guys. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually come out to my site. So one of the things that I have done, I'm just going to give you a quick show. In here, I have an on-premises installation. That was not the button I wanted to click. I have a web application, and in that web application, I have a separate site collection that I'm using for this, and it is built with the publishing framework, right? So I use the publishing portal template to create this site collection. So now when I come over to it, I'm going to jump straight to site settings first because I want to show you a little bit about where I'm putting things before I show you it actually working as responsive. So this is my site. It's R&D Productions. You can see I've got a couple of a subsite and a page there. Underneath it, marketing is a subsite and events is a page. How do I work on this? Again, this is a development environment, so this is an on-premises VM, right? So it's full servers that I have access to, but for this purpose of showing you development environment, I say that because this is not where I would store these items if I was actually writing a full trust solution to deploy this out to the server. But for this, for development, the easiest place to put that is in the master page gallery. So if I come over to my master page gallery, sometimes I like to think if I sing the Jeopardy theme song, will it go as fast as the pages need to load or not? And you'll see in here I have a folder that's called responsive. And when I open up that responsive folder, I've actually put everything I need in that folder. So my CSS is in there, my JavaScript files are in there in a folder, and then all of my master page, fav icon, all of that lives in this same folder. The reason why I did that is it makes it easier for me to develop. One of the ways that I'm developing in this, I develop in a multiple number of tools. I will tell you again, there is no wrong answer here. When it comes to what program do I use to write master pages in CSS, there is no wrong answer here. I work traditionally in a method of all different kinds of software to work with. For this demo, we're in Dreamweaver, right? I'll tell you, usually in my standard day-to-day life, I'm in Visual Studio now, whereas in 2010 environments, I was always in SharePoint Designer first and then Visual Studio. But there is no wrong answer. I have developed master pages in CSS all the way down to things like Notepad. So there is no wrong answer. It is what do you feel comfortable in? So from here, I'm going to jump over to Dreamweaver, and how I've actually done this is I have actually mapped that folder to my machine, right? So here is my master page gallery folder with everything that I need in it to edit through Dreamweaver. So why do I put it all in the master page gallery and put everything there? It's because then I have one location to map, and I can easily get to those files. And just like I used to do with SharePoint Designer, which makes it easy to rapidly develop by hitting save and refresh, and it would apply, I can do the same thing here. And then I move those things out as I move into how I'm actually going to deploy it into a production environment. So if I'm on-premises, I put it into a full trust solution. I'm going to be putting it into the root folders and creating my own, depending on what it is. If I'm Office 365, I'm probably going to be keeping it in the master page gallery or in the style library, right? And so I can really start to kind of do that. But this allows for a rapid development cycle in your development environment because it's all in one place. I come in here in Dreamweaver. I make an edit. I hit save. Then I can go straight to my browser and hit refresh, and it's going to reflect my change, and I'm going to be able to go about moving forward quickly and seeing what I'm doing as I go through. So from here, you can see I have a master page file, and I have a CSS file. Those are the two main components that I am using to create this responsive site for this demo. So in here, really typical master page, starting from Seattle, starting from Oslo, whichever one you're comfortable with, whatever method. Again, there's no wrong way, right? Whether you're using a framework like Bootstrap or you're creating your own, you're doing a hodgepodge, which is kind of what I have here. It's my own version of it, adding in different pieces. I'm using several different jQuery JavaScript libraries to help make this work. But you start from there, and I always say start from the biggest and restrict down to what you don't need, right? So a lot of people like to start from the minimal and add things in. I like to start from the biggest and restrict down. It's just my preference. I don't like to be looking for something and can't find it because it wasn't there to start with. So I typically start from the biggest and go down. You can see little things in here, like the fave icon is there. Then moving down as I go through, here's a couple, you know, jQuery libraries that have been added. Then I have my custom CSS section, and you'll see I'm linking out to two different CSS files, right? Simply adding it right there in my master page, and then I'm actually using Modernizer, which is a jQuery library as well. So real easy, adding that in there, nothing crazy, right? If you're trying to do this, a lot of people have tried to create master pages lately, and I've gotten several emails from people saying, I'm trying to put HTML5 in here, what do I do? And to which I simply say, did you try to put the HTML5 boilerplate at the top of your master page? And they typically come back and say yes, and I say go delete it, and it'll work. And the reason is it really doesn't like that HTML5 boilerplate at the top of your master page. That sometimes is one of the methods that people try to do this with. It's not really needed. We do have a lot of HTML5 that works in this already. So nothing extremely crazy here, right? I didn't go super crazy. So I'm going to go out, and I'm actually going to show you what this looks like. Here is a site that is designed out. You can see it very much looks like what we talked about in our wireframe and our design comps. It is a responsive site. This is what it looks like on the desktop version. There are a couple things that are provided for us by Microsoft that I want to talk about when it comes to responsive. So if I come back here, I'm going to go back to site settings, and I'm going to talk about this, and then I'm going to show you what it means. So the first thing that I want to talk about is image renditions. So one of the things we talked about, right, and how we do this is making our images respond based off size. So one of the things that was done in SharePoint 2013 is to give us a tool with the publishing infrastructure called image renditions. This is a great thing if you have people and you are decentralizing your content owners and they need to put different images in the page and that you want to predefine sizes that they can use, right? So I'm defining an article image versus a heading image, things like that. We do that through something that is called image renditions. You can see right here in my site settings, it's underneath look and feel. If I come to that, it's going to allow me to make use of the ability to add and edit, create my own image sizes that are predefined. So in here, you'll see here is a sample custom one that I did. It's just a 200 by 100 pixel image. Now, there's a couple of challenges when it comes to image renditions, is that we upload the image, and then we tell it which image rendition to use. It does not allow us to choose how it crops that image. Right? So think about some of those images with lots of people in them, and it just decides how to crop it. But it is very easy to add this in. So if we wanted to add in our new image rendition size, we would simply say we wanted to add a new item. Right? So if we make this, we'll go with a 450 pixels by 300. So if we save that, that's all you have to do. You simply go through and save it. It's going to add it in. I'm going to show you how this works with an image in our actual responsive page. But we've gone through. It's as simple as that. I add it in. I have images that I want to use. So I'm going to come back to my page here, and I'm going to edit it. Right? So I have my image. Still thinking. I have my image, and you'll notice on my image ribbon, it has pick rendition right here, over on the left. And if I drop down on that, I could come through and say use 450 by 300, and it's going to go through and it's going to resize that image, right? So I can define that. Like I said, this is a great tool if you are setting up decentralizing content owners, and they're going to be responsible for adding their own images into your site. Because what you can do is control the sizing of it when you're thinking about moving it responsive, right? Because I'm setting those sizes predefined. Because we know a lot of users are going to have those big files, right? And they're going to put it in here, and it's going to be the whole page. And then I go to the responsive site, and it's going to show like this much of it. If I'm setting up image renditions, I'm telling them which predefined sizes I want them to use in the site, and then I'm training them for how to use those in my site. So it's a pretty neat little way to kind of give them the idea that they're creating flexible images, but without us having to publish out, use this template or save this way or create this to people that typically don't have things like Photoshop and understand what resolution means and all of that. So this is a great little method to do that. I'm going to go through and unedit this page while we talk about the next one. So the next piece that they actually gave us is basically the first attempt at how to do responding sites, right? So in 2010, when we worked with SharePoint and we had that mobile view, right, that mobile piece of SharePoint that didn't work, so image renditions was our first piece towards responsive. Our next piece was giving us device channels. So what device channels are saying is that I can go out and create master pages and apply them based on a specific device, which sounds great, but there are very much limitations to how you use device channels. Device channels means that I could have 500 master pages that I have to manage if I'm targeting every device, right? It's a great idea. It's the kind of way that we start into it, but if we're truly building a responsive site for SharePoint, we're not making use of device channels because we are embracing the responsive nature of how we're coding and developing the master page in the CSS, and we don't have a need to do this. But you can see in here, it's not active. I didn't activate it, but it's simply saying that I want to go in and do this. I'm going to edit it just so you can see the options that are in here. It basically gives us the idea where we can come in and say, use this for this device. So you can see in here the device inclusion rules that I would have on this one would be for the Windows Phone OS, for iPhone, and for Android. And I would put those in there, and that would be what it's targeting. Whereas if I'm truly embracing the idea of responsive web design, I am including all of that through my CSS. I am using media queries. I am structuring it so that it responds without the need of a device channel. Okay? So from here, I'm going to jump over and I'm going to show how those media queries work in my CSS, and then I'm going to show you the site actually respond. I'm going to show you some tools for how we can see it respond easily. So in here, if I come over to my CSS file, you can see I've already jumped down. I pre-planned this. So here is one of my media queries, right? Right into my CSS file, giving it that media query we talked about, media for only screen and a minimum width of 768 px. And then below that, I put some information in it. So you see it's a lot like our CSS classes. It's got that open bracket, curly bracket, right? And then everything I put inside that is how it's going to adapt for that device, right? So I'm doing CSS that is specific to the items that I need for that resolution inside that media query, all in the same CSS file. Because you can see right below that, I have one for a minimum width of 1140 px, right? I can put it all in the same CSS file. I will tell you there are sometimes you will need a secondary CSS file for some things, depending on what you're doing. I do have two CSS files in this particular project. So it's not saying that you only ever need one, but I typically like to put just one CSS file as minimal as possible. Right? So here I'm putting that in there, and I'm really targeting those media types the same way we used to old school do media prints, right, for printing version of our site. Now we're doing it with media screen targeted to a resolution. And so just going through and putting that in there. A couple of other things that I like to kind of give people some hints about doing this is one of the things that I love to do with my CSS files for any project is adding in a little commented area up at the top that shows the colors, the CSS hexadecimal colors that are being utilized in that site, because it makes it easy. Like when I walk away and then I come back 6 months later and somebody has called me up and they say, we changed our corporate colors and we need to change that blue to this one instead of that one, I can easily go through and do a find and replace, right? So it makes it easy. You don't have to remember them, put them all in your file. Comment your CSS files, it does make it easier. You'll see that that does happen in here. I have things commented out, right? So comment it, put your media queries in there. It makes it so that you have all of that accessible to you, and it gives us the ability to really customize things per what we're looking to do and per resolution. So I'm going to show you this actually responding now. So the tool that I like to use for this, and I know that I'm at a Microsoft conference, but I got permission. I'm going to use Firefox to demo this because it's one of the easiest ways to do it. I will tell you Internet Explorer has an option for this in there, but it's not nearly as easy to use as the Internet Explorer, the Firefox one, and even the Chrome versions of this. But if I come out to my site, I'm going to close this out first. So here's my site, right? And I want to view this in a responsive method in Firefox provided for us is a web developer menu of tools, and in there is a responsive design view section. And when I select that, you can see it shrinks it down, it gives me that responsive view. So here is my site moving around and becoming responsive. You can see some of those things that I told you I left in here intentionally to show you the challenges. Look at the ribbon and the sweet bar as you see this intranet site in a mobile view. That is not usable, right? So this is why I say typically for a mobile view of a smartphone, I disable the ribbon and the sweet bar, right? Because I can't read that. And if you're in Office 365, the items in that sweet bar are way more than there are here. Because if I'm using the full Office 365 suite, right, I'm going to have Outlook, and I'm going to have all those extra pieces at the top, and it's going to be where I can't even read these. One of the great things here is it allows me to change the orientation. So I can simply click the little rotate button here, and it changes the orientation of my device so I can see what it looks like. I can go through multiple different device resolutions. So if I wanted to see what this looked like on a tablet, I simply come in and tell it to change the resolution, and then I can rotate that around as well and see what it looks like. So it's a really great tool to see how our sites are responding from what we're doing in our development method, right? So in here, you can see, as I moved into the higher resolution, my navigation came back out. My quick launch showed back up, right? But when I go back down to that phone size, my navigation is now collapsible, right? And it's using that control to make it collapsible. So it just kind of gives you some of the ability to easily develop and see what you're doing by using some of these tools. Now, I promised them I would show you how it works in Internet Explorer, so I'm going to do it. So I use the F12 developer tools, right? And then I can come down and I can tell it to change the size of the, in here, resize it, right, and make it smaller. And it resizes the entire window. It's not nearly as cool, right? Not nearly as cool. It just goes through. I can give it a custom one and tell it what size to make it. But it's just not nearly as easy to work with as the other if I come down to 400 by 800. So you can see Internet Explorer does have one. It's just not as easy to work with or it's kind of cool as the one in Firefox or in Chrome. So they're really kind of great ways to have this ability to develop, rapidly see what our responsive sites look like so that we can continue to make those tweaks and changes as we need to. So I'm going to jump back over here. Okay. So like I said, in my presentation here, there's actually links to the responsive design piece for Firefox and some write-up on how it works, as well as I went ahead and included the one for Chrome because a lot of people use Chrome. We have to browser test it. It's a great thing to have to be able to see that as well. So you can go through and do that. There's also a number of ways and things that you can go out and utilize to check your responsive sites. So I've created my site and I need to run it through basically through some validation. There are several tools out there that are really great to go out and do that. So there's lots of ways to develop this, to design it, and then to implement it as well. That puts us through the end. Does anybody have any questions? Go back two slides. To that one? The deck is going to be available. Well, they're recording this, and then I believe it's in the Yammer network already. And so you can go into the MySPC Yammer network and already get the deck right now. Thank you so much. Please fill out your eval so that maybe I can come back and talk again next time.